Warning, we are a spoilers podcast. At times, we are also an offensive podcast. And we are most certainly a verbally explicit podcast. So if you fear for any of your delicate sensibilities, please back up now before you reach the point of no return. All right, pussies, this is your final warning.
Welcome to another episode of Cinematic Anarchy, where today we're going to be discussing Louis Gossett Jr. and Dennis Quaid in the 1980s sci-fi, kind of classic.
Yeah, I'd say it's classic, yeah.
It's classic 100%. In the cult way, I think, because a lot of people I personally know, when I mention the name Enemy Mine, What are you talking about? I have to show them the movie.
I wouldn't call it a cult classic. I wouldn't call it because I don't think it's that level of popularity. I think it's one of those movies that if you know it, you know it.
I mentioned it to my friend today, and he said, I've never even heard of this movie. Right. And he watched a trailer of it, so now he's going to go watch it.
Right.
It's a classically obscure 80s sci-fi film with a bit of a woke vibe.
Yeah, and we'll say so.
If you can't tell, joining me today, I have our friends from the Strange and Beautiful Book Club podcast. Matt, Rachel, hello.
Hello.
Good to be here.
Again. You're joining us a lot lately.
Again. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't mind.
This is good, because our movies are kind of on hiatus, so people can boogie on over here. And I've mentioned you like 4 times on the Coming 81 Kilo podcast, so.
I mention you guys a lot, and your trailer is always somewhere within the podcast, though I have not been taking breaks lately during the recording of the podcast, so sometimes they end up at the beginning, sometimes they end up at the end. It's kind of scattered everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay, no worries.
It works.
And, well, we'll just start with first impressions of the film.
I mean, we love it. We did an episode on this
a
year ago, apparently, February of 2023.
So you're
that the date?
Yeah.
This is my first time watching this film in many, many years.
Yeah.
Many years.
It's one of those that you don't, you watch it and then you think about it. You're like, wow, that was a good movie. Like, it just, you're like, wow, that it's a good movie. It's tight. It's short. It doesn't have a lot of stuff that happens. It's extremely character driven.
It's enemies to bromance.
Yeah.
It didn't feel as old as it is watching the film. You know, it didn't feel plodding or slow. The sci-fi aspects of it didn't feel out of date, really. Outside of you have a lot of obvious painted backgrounds, so there was a lot of studio work. I believe I even read that, like, that pond where Willis and Jerry first meet. That's not what his name is in the film. David. I keep pronouncing it so incorrectly, even though I heard it about 5 million times.
It's Davidge, but Davidge. Jerry can't say Davidge, so he says Davidge.
Davidge. Where they first met, that was also the set that they used for the Das Boot model.
And
apparently the pond area was also used in a couple of scenes in The Neverending Story, which is also a film by this director.
Yeah, same director.
So, that I did not know. I'm going to have to rewatch other movies just to see a pond, I guess.
You can spot the pond. Yeah. Kind of looks like the Swamp of Sadness.
Okay.
That might be.
Yeah.
Atreyu!
Or with Morla when he's in
Don't
the tree.
Don't get into the sadness! Arjax, no!
No, Atreyu, it's Arjax, right. Yeah, why did I say Atreyu? Atreyu's the guy.
Atreyu's the kid.
The kid, yeah.
Yeah.
The one who is trying to keep the horse from being dragged deep into the muck.
From dying
the
of sadness.
The horse gets better, though.
Yeah, it does get better. That's not a spoiler. It's been too long. You snooze, you lose. You should have watched Neverending
Story. If you haven't watched The Neverending Story by now.
That's a cult classic.
Yeah.
Neverending Story. I mean, everybody's seen The Neverending Story. However, when you get into the sequels, very few have seen anything past the original. No.
Don't talk to Rachel about the sequels.
No, it's fine. This movie starts with it starts very sci-fi, though. Doesn't it start with a dogfight? Like, they're, like, pew-pew, like, firing at each other?
Fighters in space.
It starts with an initial dogfight, and they continue on as he's narrating himself, basically. Davidge. Willis. We'll call him Willis because it's easier for me to pronounce. What you talking about, Willis? Willis lets loose that they've been fighting against a war against a race who he had never personally seen.
Ever.
So there's just this rage and hatred for somebody who he has never laid eyes on before. For an entire race of people he has never laid eyes on before. So it's...
Yes, the propagandized other.
Yeah.
So the world had come together in peace and is exploring space, and they found a new place to place their hatred.
Right. Yeah. Earth is at peace, so we had to go out and start shit, basically. We went out and we were like, well, I think we could beat those guys up.
Purely territory-based.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, everybody, love across the board, peace all over the world. Let's go out and explore space. Hey, I don't recognize you. Die.
Die.
That's it.
On earth, goodwill toward men, but not aliens.
But not those guys. And this movie they were actually going to cancel this movie. Like, there was a change of leadership at the studio, and they were like, that enemy mind thing, we don't get it. We're just going to let that go. But in the contract, Louis Gossett Jr. and Dennis Quaid got paid anyway. So whether they made it or didn't make it, they got paid.
Might
as well make the movie, I guess. So thankfully they did, because we got the movie.
Just the two of them got paid regardless? That's it?
That's what's in the trivia. I'm sure other people... They're really the only character. I mean, right. There's a couple people at the beginning. There's,
like, five other characters that get a cumulative, like, 8 minutes of screen time.
I mean, yeah. Zamis is what drives the remainder of the movie.
Yeah, Zamis. But Zamis? He was a kid actor. They don't have Zamis rights back then, so it's fine. It's the 80s.
I didn't realize who Zamis was, because obviously heavy makeup.
Yeah.
Bumper Robinson has been, like, in everything. Like, he's a very recognizable face if you watched, like, The Cosby Show and A Different World and all that stuff way back when. Before The Cosby Show became something most people don't want to speak about anymore.
Right.
For obvious reasons. He was a main cast member or a guesting cast member on, I'm trying to remember the name of the show with Urkel.
I think it was Urkel, wasn't it?
No.
Family
Matters? Family Matters, yes. Family Matters.
And then
Matters.
He got his own spinoff, right?
Very shortly, I believe.
Later, Urkel got something.
He got, like...
I don't remember.
Cameos. A lot of cameos in everything.
Yeah.
They tried to keep him around for a while, but he was in everything. Like, he'd even made a small appearance in, like, Night Court at one point. So, just a very recognizable face when you take the makeup off, but I didn't recognize him.
Yes. Yeah. And he grows up a little bit.
Yep.
Well, he was a recognizable little kid, too. Like, he was a child actor. He was in a lot of different things just growing up. I think he might have just kind of disappeared for the most part near the later end of the 90s. I don't think he's been in so much since then. Nothing I recognize anyway.
He does a good job in this. I think it's so sweet when they have to have that conversation about, like, when am I going to grow up to look like you?
I want five fingers, not three.
Yeah, he's, when do I get five? And he's like, you don't get five.
No, I'm human, you're Drac. He's trying to explain the difference, but he doesn't... They've grown up together, so as far as he knows, they're the same
He's type, uncle. So like, I'm going to look like uncle someday.
No, unfortunately, that's not how this works.
He's doing voices in the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, like the new redub, just additional voices.
Okay, he's doing voiceover work everywhere. Merry Little Looks Batman.
Like, he's done a lot of voice work.
He's done a lot of video games. Like, it says here that he was in, like, the Suicide Squad, Lego Marvel Avengers.
Yeah, mostly voice work.
The vast majority of it. Starfield, Saints Row, and... Apparently he is a fireman's voice in American Dad, which I'm not going to try to pick out a random fireman from some cutscene.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of these.
Do you remember his poignant work as fireman in American Dad?
Fireman A.
Additional fireman voice.
Additional voices.
One episode, 2022, five words, that's all he got. That's okay.
Aw.
He got paid, it's a payday. It counts.
It is.
He's in some popular games, too, so now I'm going to... It's games that I play, so now I can associate him with different games. Though, The Tourist, that's not an easy character to just pick out off the top of my head. The Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners, The Tourist. What Tourist? Explain the further, tourist. Please. The Tourist.
Yes.
There isn't many tourists, just one tourist.
He's not in it as much as you think, if you look at the timestamps, because it takes a really long time for Davich and Jerry to get together.
Right.
To where they're actually
stop trying to kill each other. Yeah. Well, actually, Jerry's never trying to kill him, but he's always trying to kill Jerry.
And if we're entirely honest, almost the entire end of the movie, Bumper had to play dead.
Yeah.
Zamis was just half out of it and asleep, like, almost the entirety of the end of the movie.
Yeah, because he gets captured by the people at the mine, because we had to have a mine, because they called it enemy mine, and then they were like, no one's going to get that. No one's going to know that it's, like, my enemy. They're going to think it's about a mine, so we got to add a mine, y'all.
And now we understand that it's enemy mine, as in the possessive, and we're wondering what the hell the mine's doing in the movie.
Right. I'm like, okay. I mean, it never even occurred to me that that was a mine and that it might relate back to enemy mine. I think because it feels like the main plot here is about the guys that are enslaving Drac or
labor. Right, it's like that enemy, he's mine.
Yeah.
Because now we're friends.
Right.
I never thought of it as like an object or a reference to a place or thing. And I guess...
And honestly, that's the most boring part of the movie, the very end, where they're like tossing dummies into loading trucks and shit. And you're like, I don't care. I want to go back to the part where we were learning each other's language and we were just cussing at each other. Like, can we go back to that?
He's sheet.
And commenting on construction skills.
He's sheet. Yeah. Jerry learns English first because, and I told Matt, it's like completely believable that after a construction project, Jerry knows all the cuss words. Because because Davidge puts together the hut thing, and then Jerry's just sitting there, which we find out why Jerry's not participating very much, like, halfway through the movie. But Jerry is like, that's shit. He's like, it's not shit. And he's like, no, it's shit. And then it falls down, and he just starts laughing. I just love that part so much.
I've seen all these videos recently where it's like, if you hire a contract and they sound like this, and it's someone recording, like, walking into their house while a contractor's working on something, and they're just cussing. It's like, that's how you know it's going to be built right.
If it's dead quiet, be worried.
So we start with that dogfight, and they're, like, running out of K's or whatever. And so his guy in the back, is, like, looking at the display, and it's supposed to show, like, the remaining number of bullets or whatever, but it's actually just a digital clock upside down.
Right, it's supposed to be space-looking symbols.
Yeah.
But it's just a, like, seven-segment display upside down.
Upside down. Because it's sci-fi in the 80s, right? So we just did our best. And then they chase Jerry to that planet and, like, crash land on the planet. And he kills his gunner because his gunner's, like, thing overloads and he dies. And then he has to go on the hunt for the Drac because he's like, the Drac made me do this. He made me fly to this planet. He made me kill my gunner. And I'm going to get that son of a bitch. And this whole interaction at the pond, I think, is hysterical. Because first, he immediately drops his gun. He has, like, one weapon. And the first thing he does is fumble it and drop it in the pond.
Yep.
Well, because he needed better footing on that, you know, little piece of ledge that's barely there and looks like it could crumble at any second. That's what you brace yourself on.
Right.
Right. Put all your weight onto it and hold on tight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Jerry leaves that gun out as, like, bait. Like, oh, it's a human. Humans love guns. It's fine. And the gun is, like, the most sci-fi looking gun. It's like a series of gradiated orbs.
And they're all chrome and glowy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's green when he glow. Lights the water on fire. He's like, oh, I'm going to light the water on fire. That's going to keep Jerry from coming out. Because Jerry's semi-aquatic. He's, like, amphibious. It is amphibious. And he just comes out of the water like, you lit the water on fire, man. I don't know what to tell you. Like, it didn't work out. It didn't hurt me. And then that's when it subdues Davidge.
Why are there fuel receptacles, easily removed glass containers?
Right. I mean, we all have questions here. Like, why did they have liquid fuel? Where were they getting liquid fuel from?
Maybe their bodies produce it.
Well, Davidge has the same thing, remember, because his ship is leaking liquid fuel at the very beginning.
So, biofuel processing plant attached to their septic system?
Yeah, maybe.
Turn human waste into...
Space age efficient.
Yeah. Well, they have a whole space station, which we see later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They turn the human bodily waste into fuel. It smells like shit, but it's fully functional.
And I like that Jerry can fall asleep anywhere. Because Jerry is pregnant, and I can confirm I could fall asleep anywhere when I was pregnant. And I love that reveal. Like, I love this movie so much because it gave us so much. It gave us, like, two implacable enemies who actually had just never met each other. And as soon as they meet each other and they actually gain an understanding of each other, they can't be enemies anymore because now they're friends. And then it's subverting Willis's understanding of, like, what it means. Like, this guy's my enemy. He's a guy. But it's not. Jerry doesn't have a gender. His race is neither male nor female. So Jerry's pregnant because they just spontaneously have babies at some point in their life.
Women always have anxiety when they're in labor. I am not a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. Every woman gets nervous. I am not a woman. Like, it's so good. Like, we got this in the 80s. What? We got this in the 80s and nobody talks about it. This movie is so good. And Louis Gossett Jr. fucking kills it the entire time.
Well, it's because this kind of movie and social commentary was not poignant in the 80s. There wasn't a lot that kind of brought that kind of stuff to the surface because we were still doing a lot of good-natured racial bashing throughout all the 80s.
Right.
So this kind of woke film was not something that kind of was brought to the surface. This was buried. I actually at first had mistaken it for another kind of obscure cult classic sci-fi film called The Arena in my mind when it's like that was the movie that was playing in the back of my head and I'm watching this and I'm like, no, this isn't what I thought it was. No, not at all.
It kind of has that Star Trek vibe of, oh, we're not talking about Russians, we're talking about aliens.
Even though the speech or the language that Louis Gossett Jr., well, you had actually mentioned this to me, so I ended up looking it up a little bit more. But the language that Louis Gossett Jr. speaks, the Drac language, is technically a lot of Russian in reverse.
Oh, that's funny.
Where he does the, like, gurgle, the gargle sound.
Yeah, Rachel told me this when we did our episode, but they're like, oh, what should the aliens sound like? And Louis Gossett Jr. was like, oh, well, I used to do this gargle thing when I was a kid, and it really, like, pissed my mom off.
Yeah.
And so he did it for him, and they're like, we love it.
He's like, all right. He crushed. There's the scene where he's on, like, the cliff. They're like, in the sunset, they're like up on this set with this beautifully painted background. And he's singing part of that little tome that he has that he wears around his neck. And he gets Davich to translate it. And he's like, you know, if you have someone do evil to you, you don't do evil in return. You love them. And you should love your neighbor as yourself. And Davich is like, oh, I've heard this before. Like, this came out of human teachings. And Jerry goes, yeah, because truth is truth.
Right.
You're like, ooh. Oh God, like
it gets pretty deep.
Why don't more people know about this movie? Like, it's so I think because it was so ahead of its time, because it was having a conversation nobody else was having.
Right. It feels very appropriate now.
Yeah.
And it was impossibly deep for an 80s sci-fi film, because a lot of the 80s sci-fi film either went heavy action or heavy schlock. It was one or the other. There was not a lot of deep meaning behind a lot of that stuff in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, my brain, I had something else to say and my brain checked out. It's been doing that a lot lately.
It just doesn't feel like an 80s movie. Maybe that's why.
No, I mean...
It feels...
Unless you told me it was an 80s film and, you know, you actually look at Dennis Quaid, you wouldn't have thought, hey, that's the 80s. It's like, wow, Dennis Quaid is young here. Is this the 70s? Maybe.
Oh, you're a child. Oh, okay, got it. Yeah, okay. He's so young in this.
There was just one scene when he's marching back to his ship. Like, most of the film, he doesn't look too young. But, like, right after they shave him again and he's marching back to his ship to go save Zamis, he looks like a kid.
Yeah.
Like, that entire march. Like wow, you're, like, 18, 19 here. Him
at the very beginning of the movie. Like, oh, wait, that doesn't quite look like Dennis Quaid. Wait, yeah, sometimes it does.
Yeah.
I'm used to a slightly more weathered Dennis Quaid, like a la, like, Inner Space.
Yes, yeah. The more, like, where he has the lines. I feel like he has really distinctive, like, creases. He doesn't have them in this movie.
Not the smooth-faced bumpkin.
He's all smooth.
Yeah, he does have very pronounced, like, facial lines around his mouth.
He's like, did you just really get out of high school to do this?
Yeah, he may have.
It's possible.
I don't know. When was he born? I don't know how old he would have been in this.
When were you born? You look that up. I'll look that up, and you guys keep talking.
Oh, I was going to say, there's some really cool details in this movie that the more you watch it, like Davich and Worcester, his or I just said it like I'm in Massachusetts.
Worcester.
Buddy Joey and Willis, like when they crash their ship, they have nothing. They have no survival kit. They have no emergency beacon. They don't have anything. And then Jerry has an emergency beacon, emergency rations. Jerry is literally just waiting to be rescued.
Yeah. And Davich is like, everything he needs to survive for a while.
Yeah. And Davich is like, no one's coming for us. No one's going to come to get me.
So Dennis Quaid was born in 1959. So when this film came out in 1985, he would have been, what, 30, 31, around there?
26.
Well, we should...
79 to 85?
No,
1950. Oh, sorry, 1954. My apologies. 54. I did say 59. My apologies. April 9th, 1954.
31.
So he would have been about 31.
Wow.
Which he does not look 30 31. In that.
No, he's a well-preserved 31 in this.
It's very well-preserved. Like I said, I thought he was like 18, 19, walking around in the space station there.
He looks really young.
It's like me if I shave.
Yeah.
I look like a teenager if I shave.
I haven't fully shaved in years. You don't want to see that mess.
I do it about once a year.
Yeah. But it's good. I mean, we follow through on this theme of the fact that basically the human soldiers are being used. They are
as expendable.
They are an expendable commodity, and that the race that Jerry belongs to, the Drac, they don't believe the same thing. And it's because they have like a one-to-one reproduction. So when you kill a Drac, you literally end their bloodline.
Right.
Because there's not two parents, there's only one. And so you have this chain of unbroken Drac, and then you kill that Drac, you're done. There no more will ever come from that family. And they get that cool thing where they have to sing their
lineage.
Their lineage.
Well, I think one Drac can have more than one child.
You can have more than one child, but like you're not combining genetic material.
Right.
So it was just it's interesting, and there's a lot going on in this movie. And then you get to the end, and you're like, oh, okay, now it's 80s sci-fi.
So I guess the thing would be is if you killed that Drac before they were able to reproduce, then that ends that lineage effectively. Unless, of course, their parents before them had had more than one child.
Right.
Or parents.
But it's still not the same as, like, I can have three children, they can each have three children, now we have nine.
Right, so they would end up, as a population, they reproduce more slowly.
Yeah. And they don't have any control over when that happens.
Right.
Obviously, because Jerry's pregnant on this planet.
Oh, he said it outright. I have no control over it. Little
pants. Because he's like, what are you sewing? And he holds up the pants.
Zombies.
And he's like, oh, zombies.
Well, at first, I didn't connect one and one. I didn't realize that he was calling the child zombies. I thought that was the name for jammies for them.
Oh,
I thought
he was
saying the word jammies.
Right. Zombies. And then
the setting is really creepy. Like, the setting, like this almost barren planet that they're on.
Yeah, the alien landscape is done really well.
The freaky pit aliens. Like, those always scared me. The little pit aliens with the, like, tentacle that comes out and grabs them.
Mm-hmm.
I like the little fuzzy turtle dog thing that,
yeah.
Before it got eaten. With a loud belch.
Bug. He makes everything out of that because it's meteor proof.
I feel like I would have been a little bit more frightened by the creature initially if it hadn't emitted a belch.
Oh, yeah. And it belches out the shell.
Yeah, just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I would have been a little bit more intimidated by it initially anyway. It was still a pretty intimidating creature once it surfaced.
But, no, they freaked me out as a kid. I remember being terrified by them. And so when I watch it now, I'm like, ugh. Like, I remember being so freaked out by those.
Remind me a little of the angler fish with the little thing. Yeah, it kind of reminded me like a sand angler fish.
Well, it's the way they stick up and then they like hover up and then they like flop down.
Kind of lash
back. I don't
know,
that just freaked me out as a kid. Even like you watch it now and of course you can tell it's like a puppet, but I'm still like, oh, it's still freaky. I don't know. I love it.
I'm still sad the little fuzzy turtle puppy died, you know?
Right. Well, apparently there's a lot of them because there's shells everywhere.
They are the rat of that particular planet.
They are the rat of that planet, yeah. There's like two things. There's the turtle bug and there's the pit alien and there's like no other animals.
Or possibly the cockroach of that planet.
Something subterranean.
Yeah.
I'm thinking cockroach of that planet. You can shoot it in the eye. It takes so much damage and nothing. Just keeps going.
Yeah.
Apparently you can hit it with a meteor. Still keep going.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a cockroach. Yeah, no, I'm sold.
I thought he was going to make helmets at first. When he's trying to explain that these shells would protect them from meteors, and he's putting it over his head. I'm just like, are you going to make armor out of these things? What are you doing?
No, a roof.
A roof.
A roof, yeah.
I was waiting for, like, full plate armor.
Yeah. I just love that this whole space full of caves exists, and they worked really hard and built, like, a hut. Like, you could have just gone to the mountains and gone in a cave.
Would have been a lot easier.
In the mountains, there's not much food around.
Yeah, but he still goes out and hunts for food and brings it back. Yeah,
and he raises zombies in the caves.
Yeah, so clearly it's not that bad.
I mean, you don't have to build your hut in the middle of a bunch of burnt out trees that could fall on you at any second. The cave system would be a little bit more safe.
Right.
And I'm guessing that particular anglerfish monster probably couldn't have burrowed through rock.
No, and then they would have been even safer.
So, hindsight. Isn't that where they lived afterwards? Like, from there on out, that's where they lived?
Yeah, once, because I think it's like, okay, well, we've made our place here, and we're not sure how long between meteor showers, so maybe it's not worth the risk of going.
Oh, yeah, because it would probably have been a long journey.
Yeah, although Davich goes on, like, a journey of self-discovery. He leaves, because remember they...
Yeah, and he finds the Pepsi can.
Kind of find, like, a middle ground, and then they go after each other. And it's shortly after the scene where they're talking about each one of their, like, spiritual leaders.
Mickey Mouse.
And he keeps making fun of Jerry's. He calls Jerry's, what does he call him? Because his name is, like, it's a very, like, the gurgle sound. And he keeps making fun of it and saying the wrong name. And it's like, I'm going to hurt you if you keep doing that. And that's when he tells him, your Mickey Mouse is a big dope.
Yes.
Or Mickey Mouse is a big dope. And if you watch that scene, Dennis Quaid is trying not to laugh so hard.
He had to turn away.
And I guess he cracked up every take, and they finally just had to use the take where he made it the longest. Because he couldn't make it. He, like, walks off screen afterwards, too, because he couldn't hold it together.
It was the only take where he did not completely just bust out laughing immediately after Louis Gossett Jr. rattled off that line. Is that one take.
It's a good line.
You know, they did it, like, 10 or 15 different times. It was that one take, that the only one that he didn't burst out laughing.
And then they, like, go after each other. They try to kill each other again, and that's when Dennis is like, we gotta go, we gotta move, like, we're going crazy here. But Jerry can't leave. Jerry can't go anywhere. Jerry's, like, hella pregnant, but he doesn't tell him that. And so he goes off on, that's when he finds that weird Pepsi can, which I was trying to look it up, because I think that Pepsi can is the same in another movie, and I remember reading that, but I can't find it. So just, I don't know, take that for what it is. But that's when he sees the enslaver guys fly over, and he realizes this is a mining planet. Like, oh no, it's an enemy mine.
It's a mine that belongs to enemies.
Oh, hold on a moment. I actually ended up looking it up. I'm looking it up right now. The Pepsi can, for some reason.
I tried, but I couldn't. My short amount of attention span right now just couldn't do it.
And I can't find it either.
I just remember
thinking. Yeah, it just mentions a Pepsi can and a Coke can.
I think they had to, like, Pepsi, they had to do something with Pepsi to get the use of the name, because it's associated with the bad guys.
It's a Coca-Cola can, it says. The empty soft drink can that Davidge finds in the film is Pepsi. In the novel by Barry B. Longyear, the empty soft drink can is Coca-Cola, but they didn't have permission from Coke to use that product, so they ended up using a Pepsi can instead.
Okay, well, that's fair.
As for where that other Pepsi can went, where have they used that before, I have no idea. It doesn't tell me.
It's weird. It's like two spheres with, like, it's like a barbell, almost.
It looks very familiar, like I've seen it in someplace else.
Yeah, that's okay. You could put up a poll. Has anybody seen this Pepsi can anywhere else?
Have you seen this can? If so, where?
Where?
That's weird, because I looked up Enemy Mine Pepsi can reused, and for some reason it came up with the word lyrics. I'm like, lyrics? Is there a song called Enemy Mine Pepsi can?
I hate it when Google fills in stuff for you, and you're like, that wasn't it at all, Google. What the heck are you doing?
I'm going to end up Googling that tonight just to try to figure out where the hell the can came from. Did they use this someplace else?
It's fine. I sometimes get this movie and Soldier mixed up.
Oh, the Kurt Russell film?
Yeah, the Kurt Russell film.
Also very good.
Definitely. A very underrated film by him, or with
him.
Which
technically, canonically takes place in the Blade Runner universe.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple Easter eggs, like when they're dumping trash, one of the pieces of trash is one of the cars. Yeah, the flying cars from Blade Runner.
And then when they're looking at his file, one of the places he's been stationed is the Tannhauser Gate.
I feel like I've heard that somewhere before. I'm not sure who told me.
That's another good movie. That's another good, simple, character-driven movie. And I really don't think good character-driven movies get the credit they deserve. Especially when they're set in a fantastical setting. I feel like people go to sci-fi and fantasy and they're like, I want dragons, I want sword fighting, I want ships, I want them flying around, I want them shooting lasers at each other. And then when you don't get that, you're like, well, I didn't like that sci-fi movie. And it's like, well, no, I mean, it was good. It was a good movie.
But just... even in the 80s, like, the sci-fi genre wasn't considered as mature as to justify having more like deep narratives.
Well, this is two years.
It was flashy.
Yeah.
Action sci-fi.
This is 2 years after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I feel is.
So if you're like,
I'm not a fan of Return of the Jedi.
I only like the one with the Ewoks singing at the end.
I feel like, mind you, this may just be because I grew up with the Star Wars films, and I feel like they've just kind of beaten it into the ground at this point for me.
Oh my god!
Oh yes,
it's way too overdone.
Something fatigue.
Franchise fatigue.
It's the same way I feel about Marvel. Like the first few movies, I was like, "Oh, this is fantastic," and then like, I'm not gonna go pay to watch this in the theater again. Just
no.
I'm good.
No. Once they started having TV shows and I now had to keep up with the TV show and the movie, if you want me to see a movie a year, I'll do that. That's fine. But once it was like, here's this 6-episode TV show and this 24-episode TV show and this movie and that movie and this other movie and they all relate to each other. You have to watch them
in the right order.
I can't do
it. Oh, and don't forget like the little mini episodes that they have on Disney now too.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, the What If cartoon somehow ties into everything and pushes a few things forward over here, too, so they can change some things around. Oh, okay. No.
I think if we ever really wanted to torture ourselves, we'd start a podcast where we have to watch everything Marvel, and it would just be us going, nah, I hate this so much.
I watched the first episode of Loki, and I watched the last episode of Loki.
And now you know everything. That's all you need.
Yeah. It's
and
fine.
The last episode of Loki explained everything that happened through season 1 and season 2.
I think they even do a recap if you wait for a second.
Yeah.
Don't skip. It'll give you a recap.
You know what I liked? I liked Werewolf by Night.
Yes.
Werewolf by Night. That was
a Marvel product.
Fucking phenomenal.
That was really, really good.
Yeah. Both black and white and full color. Both were great.
I don't feel like Werewolf by Night is... It doesn't fall into anything, though, right? It's just like a separate thing.
No, it's a standalone. They just made it.
It's as not like in the Marvel Cinematic
That's why universe. It was good.
Yeah.
Right.
It's because they weren't trying desperately to tie it into the rest of the mess.
Right. It was good. It was really good. I did like that a lot. I like a standalone movie like Enemy Mine, not to bring it back to the topic at hand or anything, but I don't always want a series. Sometimes I want a nailed one-off. And that's this fair. Feels like a start, middle, and an end. There's no setup for a sequel. There's no cash grab for Enemy Mine 2. There's just a guy who becomes best friends with the person that he thought was going to be his enemy forever. And it's really just because they come to a place of understanding. And once they understand each other, he can't hate Jerry anymore. And then ultimately, he raises Jerry's child and sacrifices his entire career to rescue his child.
Now, we do have to talk...
And then takes the child to its homeworld.
Yeah, and his lineage.
Sings his lineage, which he gets added to.
Yeah.
Out of respect, they added him to their lineage.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think this movie is phenomenal. And think about how timely it is. Not only is it learning to love someone who's different from you, but Jerry is non-binary.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, it also tackles issues of how Davich identifies with gender, because here's this alien, which to him presents as masculine, who is now pregnant. And he has to navigate that. And we get the fun interaction where he's like, oh my god, it's okay. Women always get nervous. And he's like, I'm not a woman. And then he has to like help him with labor because Jerry is having problems with labor.
I believe. And we have to use a different pronoun here. It's them, technically.
It's it. No, Jerry calls himself it.
It? Yeah, right. It's not a he, it's not a she, it's an it.
Right. Jerry uses it. I think we talked about this in the podcast, and we were way better in our podcast about sticking with it. But we're really tired. Jerry calls itself it, and then Davich calls Jerry it, and Jerry never corrects him. So, corrects it.
Correct.
So, no, Jerry never corrects him, Davich.
Right.
Oh, yeah, Jerry never corrects Davich.
Right.
I think it's just because it is hard to use. It feels like objectification. It feels like I'm being disrespectful.
A reduction.
Yeah, so it is difficult. We came across this when we did Murderbot, too, because Murderbot is it. And for the life of us, we had a hard time sticking with it. I feel like them I can do, but then once we hit it, I'm like, I can't. It feels wrong.
I've even had trouble with they, them. I'll be honest. It's just the remedial English in my brain. It has a tough time associating they, default. Them with a single person.
Yeah, I don't use the correct pronouns for male, female, like he, she. Like, if you listen to any podcast, it's a cash grab. I'm he, I'm she. I'm loosely attached to pronouns at any given time anyway. And then it is just challenging. But I think the fact that they chose to use that is fascinating. Because we could have just made Jerry feminine. And in fact, I think they offered this role to a woman. But instead, we get a male character played by a man who ends up pregnant on screen. And it's not, what's the one, 9 months with...
Oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He does a really good job of displaying both masculine and effeminate characteristics.
Yeah, Louis Gossett Jr., didn't he win something for this?
I don't think he won anything for this specifically. He won an Oscar for something. I don't think it was for Enemy Mine.
He should have.
I'm hoping he got nominated for something at the very least, because he did a fantastic job in this film. But
it won 2 awards. What did it win? It won a Saturn Award for Best Science Fiction Film, and then it won a Saturn Award for Best Actor. Oh, no, it was a nominee for Best Actor, Louis Gossett Jr.
Okay, so he was nominated, but did not win. I think that the 6.8 rating on IMDb is a friggin' tragedy.
It is. It really is. Let me see what some of those low ratings are. That's what I like to go back and be like, who brought you down and why? And I guarantee you it's the effects were bad.
What was your issue? Why do you have issues? You are my issue for rating it so low. There were so many, like, 582 one-star ratings. 582. No,
all of you go home. You're drunk. Quit it.
The average rating here, which was about 16,000 people, was a 7-star rating. But there's that handful of people that are down below here. 4-star, 3-star, 2-star. Just terrible, terrible people. I don't like you. I don't want to talk to you. We don't know.
Did they even watch the movie?
The Odd Couple in Space. So cringe.
I'm making a statement by basically hating people that I've never seen before.
Yeah, that's
for rating this one star.
We just learned about that. Here, so what we need to do is learn about them by reading their reviews. So this is a 4-star review where they called it The Odd Couple in Space, parentheses, cringe.
Cringe.
Get out.
Okay.
You know what? I love a painted background. Do you know the skill required to paint those fucking backgrounds?
Oh.
And make them look like scenery? Get out. That is a skill, and I love them every single time. Just like I like the stupid stop motion clay animation. Star Wars did
it, and we don't make fun of Star Wars for doing it.
Yeah, I know.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and read you the first 3 1-star ratings they have listed for IMDb. Are you ready?
Okay, I am so ready.
IMDb, headline, a movie with a message, yeah, right. Who on earth made this big time stink? Even if there was supposed to be a moral about tolerance and putting aside differences to achieve a common goal, which I doubt, the completely abysmal script utterly annihilates what little depth there was. The rest of the movie is a monstrous bore. The villain overacts really, really, really badly. The laughable special effects look like they came from the Buck Rogers era rather than the Star Wars era. And the fact the critic could deem this movie a sci-fi classic as a puzzlement indeed.
Who is the villain?
Racism.
Racism and prejudice.
This guy obviously misunderstood the movie. I think that he was considering Jerry the villain.
Did he watch the correct movie?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's the guy who plays Leon in Blade Runner. He's at the very end.
Right.
He punches Davich in the face.
Technically, they could consider him a villain.
A slaver.
But there's not enough there for him to be considered overacting.
I know. What does he do? Does he punch too extremely?
And I wouldn't even consider him the villain of the movie. He's a bad person.
The special effects aren't good. That scene where the wreath is flying through space at us is so well done. And then we zoom into the space station, and that's the part where I thought it was at the beginning, but I guess it's almost close to the end. But for me, it's like one of the most poignant scenes where they're like putting people down the conveyor belt, and they're like, okay, this guy's a Christian, and they push the Christian button, and it plays a Christian service, and then they eject the body, and then they release a wreath, and then they pull the next guy up.
Next guy didn't need music. Yep. He's an atheist.
Yeah, oops, an atheist, no music, and they just let him go. And then they try to steal the book from around Dennis's neck. And that's when he wakes up, Willis's neck. But, like, that scene is so good. That scene with people forget that Star Wars was revolutionary in the way it used special effects. So it's not like everybody was working with the same team that the Star Wars team had.
Right.
So for 1985, those special effects are pretty fucking good. I mean, can we all take a moment and appreciate Dark Star? And the blown up ball with feet glued on it. That's Dan O'Bannon, who would go on to do the special effects in Aliens.
Gotta start somewhere.
Gotta start somewhere, exactly.
I mean, Hans Zimmer got his start in a movie that was called Zero Boys.
Yeah. We don't all start with Pirates of the Caribbean and other big, 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 big movies.
That's not a director, anyway. Hans Zimmer, the composer.
Yeah. He composes the music for the second and on Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah.
My head went off in a different direction. And reading this other review, and I'm trying to understand, like, I feel like some people, when they want to critique something as not good or lousy, they try to pull out words that, like, why would you use this to describe anything?
Yeah.
This one begins. It says, clumsy and outdated. That's the headline. It says, this movie was made in 1985 by a once great director, but it looks like it was made in 1965 by some cretinous dilettante.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I went to thesaurus.com.
I'm going to have to add that to my round of, like, oh, you cretinous dilettante.
Add it to your repertoire.
Imagine pulling that out seriously as an insult for anyone ever. You're like, oh, you cretin.
The third one was lengthy. It's headlined, same old crap in a movie that takes no chances at all, which is... obviously, they didn't watch the whole film. But underneath, I'm not going to read the three paragraphs. I'm just going to go back down here where it says, easily one of the worst 100 movies ever made.
I'm sorry, what?
Not enough mining.
I'm sorry, there was a mine in the title, and there was no mine until the very end of the movie. And I did not feel like the mine was my enemy.
I think the problem is, this is a March 2008 review. And I think the problem is that he's comparing it, A, to movies currently or in the early 2000s, saying we get this kind of stuff all the time. He's saying it takes no chances while not understanding this was 1985, and this took way more chances than was for the norm back then.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise you had, Solar Babies. And there's another one from that same time
period. There's a movie that took some chances.
Wait, there's another movie from that time period. Or maybe it's a newer one, but it's about nuns. And it's like a convent of nuns that use roller skates. And they're like vigilante nuns. And it's one of those things where it's like, if I had a nickel for every time that happened, I've had two nickels. But it's weird that it happened twice. Like, why were there roller skating vigilantes in the 80s?
Future was supposed to be rollerblades.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Everybody was supposed to be on rollerblades.
Doesn't it have the two lead actors from Lost Boys in it?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, the guy whose name I can never remember because he has two first names. And then...
Jason Patrick.
Yeah. Jason Patrick. I only know he has two first names. And then Star, she's in it too.
Trying to remember her name. I can't remember her name off the top of my head. That's going to bother me now.
I guess that movie takes more chances. There's teenagers and they wear roller skates and they're in like a Mad Max era post-apocalyptic future.
What's the one with the kangaroos?
Tank Girl.
Tank Girl. Oh, yeah. Whenever I think of Solar Babies, I end up thinking of Tank Girl.
I think those are Jamie Gertz.
Yeah.
Star.
Jamie Gertz. Yeah, star.
Lesser known for Solar Babies. Even though that was not a bad movie. That was a fun movie to watch, honestly.
Yeah. It's just one of those movies. If I paid money to go watch it, I probably would have been upset. If I was like, this is going to be a great sci-fi movie, and you go and you're like, that was fun.
I'm pretty sure that I paid $14.95 for a VHS copy at one point.
Oh, nice. We're in the middle of moving, so our TV isn't hooked up to anything streaming, so we had to go to Walmart to the like $5 DVD bin.
We raided the $5 bin.
To get stuff for the kids.
I think we spent $100 on $5 movies.
So my daughter pulled out Infinite. Do you remember Infinite? It's with that Mark Wahlberg movie.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'm going to get this. I was like, no. I was like, it's a bad movie. She goes, oh, but we like bad movies. And I was like, no, it's not that kind of bad movie. It's just a bad movie.
There's bad movies that are so bad they're fun to watch. And then there's movies where you go, no.
No.
If I could put that back before I watched it, life would be beautiful.
Yeah. I forgot it existed. And then I was like, didn't I watch a movie with Mark Wahlberg where he was like immortal? And I had to like Google it and try to figure out what it was. But like, I mean, that one was bad and forgettable. Solar Babies is bad but memorable. And then Enemy Mine isn't bad in any way at all. And I can't believe it has fewer than like, it should have a much higher rating.
I agree wholeheartedly.
I could bottle the rage I feel every time people are like, but it had bad effects.
It was 1985.
Yeah. I know. Fuck. Just, I can't. It drives me. Like, we watch a lot of 90s TV, and like, one of my favorite 90s sci-fi shows is Babylon 5. And a lot of the criticism I see is like, I could never watch it. The special effects are so bad. It's like, it was on TV in the early 90s, and they tried to use CG. I'm sorry? Would you fucking look past it? It's J. Michael fucking Straczynski. Watch the show! It's the best television show that's ever been written, ever, ever. I mean, he wrote some She-Ra episodes that maybe were not the best, but it's okay. It's fine. It was She-Ra.
Right, you wrote 5 seasons in advance.
Yeah.
Because there are so many, like, interconnecting plot arcs.
Yeah.
And people just kind of shit on the special effects.
Right.
Yeah, that were
special effects are the smallest part of
like,
the story.
You're mad at Game of Thrones because they fumbled the ending? Okay, well, this is a show where he wrote the entirety of the 5 seasons in advance. He has everything planned from season 1, episode 1, all the way to season 5, the final episode.
And there's special a whole bunch effects of variations to allow outs for every single main character.
Yeah, like if anybody wanted to leave, everyone had a back door so he could continue with continuity even if an actor couldn't stay.
The special and effects at the time for that show ad-lib would have been considered revolutionary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, you know, we're spoiled now. Like, highly spoiled. Sorry, that's just a sigh of exasperation for people that...
Yeah, I think part of the value in watching older stuff is to give you some perspective on, like, how nice we have it to have such highly produced, like, series.
Yeah, television shows.
But it also spoils people to the point where when you go back to watch these shows from decades past, some people won't sit down. It's that low attention span. People don't want to sit down to get into the show. They get through 1 or 2 episodes and they're like, not for me, just because the special effects aren't up to par with what they're currently watching.
Yeah.
It's not Game of Thrones. This was 20, 30 years ago. You know, just suck it up. Give it a few. Enjoy
also,
the story.
They're not bingeable. They're not designed to be binged in the same way. So people have to interact with it way differently. Like, they were supposed to be watched 1 a week.
Right.
1 a week. And so they were not formulated for you to be able to just sit down and crush all 6 episodes. There's 28 episodes in a season. You don't sit and binge that. You watch an episode, you wait. You watch an episode or 2 episodes, and then you wait. And that's how you're supposed to interact with it.
You attempt to binge but and then feel older afterwards.
Yeah. You will die. It will take forever.
Like, I just learned, I bought an old television show, the Friday the 13th series. You can't binge that.
No. No, they're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be like one and savor.
Watch a couple episodes, maybe.
Yeah.
And then digest.
But it's also tough for people to like pop it. If you have it on like physical media, it's tough for people to like pop in a DVD and not want to try to watch the entire disc.
Yeah, play all.
You know, it's, I want like one of those, they used to have like carousels where you could put 100 discs in and just program it to play one episode and then move on to the next disc.
Oh, that'd be nice.
That'd be a good way to emulate.
Multiple DVD player at one time.
Yeah, I think we have like a 5-disc thing.
Yeah.
That's why I'm a wrestling fan. You know, I've watched a lot of WWE. It's kind of how me and my father connected as I was growing up. He watched a lot of wrestling back when those like NWA, AWA, WCW in its heyday, blah, blah, blah. However, they now have like the whole catalog of everything on Peacock. And I've always wondered, even when WWE had their own streaming services, why they never thought to add like an option where you could go in and watch the shows chronologically. So you're getting each episode as they came out.
Yeah.
As opposed to having to go through and bounce back and forth between different timelines to try to get it all together. It's a pain in the butt.
Oh, across right. All of their different programs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been cool.
So, I mean, they have everything there. They have ECW, WWE, WCW. They have the old stuff. So technically, you could go back in the heydays of, like, even 1980s WWE and watch them alongside of, like, okay, this is when this came out. At the same time, this for the AWA, NWA, and, you know, WCW were all playing at the same time. So you're watching the shows as they were coming out chronologically. I don't understand why they never had that option.
That's interesting. Yeah. Like, no, I want to watch it all in order.
Or, like, why
you have to, like, curate your own playlist.
If you have Buffy and Angel sitting up here on a, like, I think they're both on Hulu now, right?
Maybe.
Why you can't, you know, go into a specific, you know, have a specific setting where you can watch them. Like, at certain point, yeah. He splits off, and he's got his own show running alongside of her. A couple of episodes bump into each other. They have same thing with the Arrowverse, with the Arrow, Flash...
Legends of Tomorrow. Every episode, they know the airing date of it.
Right.
And so you could even generalize it to say, I want to pick, like, these four, like, any four shows that were airing with any overlap, and then just play them in sequence of air date. So then if you have, like, you can just picking arbitrary shows, like you were talking about Buffy and Angel, you could say, I want to watch Buffy and Angel, and I want to watch the, like, combined list of episodes in order of air date, then you'd say, oh, Buffy episode came out on Monday of this week, and then Angel came out on Thursday, and then move on to the next episode of Buffy on Monday, next episode of Angel on Thursday, whatever. And, like, I don't think that'd be that complicated of a feature to develop. It'd just be combining the two shows into one playlist, a custom playlist, and then playing them in order of air date.
It'd be having, like, curated playlists, or, like, they create a playlist for you.
So here, we need to, like, just make a trademark so that, like, if the powers that be actually listen to this, this is our idea.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't been implemented, like, anywhere.
You put in two, like, you should be able to select two shows or select a certain number of shows and then just be, like, play by air date.
Yeah.
And have them play by air date.
Yeah. That would all be you could even pick an arbitrary number of shows, like all the professional wrestling.
They would have to make sure all the data is correct. Because I know, like, with Forever Night, it's different everywhere.
I think they should have, like, a service, like Movies Everywhere, right? Except for you have your streaming services. So you have Hulu, Netflix, blah, blah, blah. Just these streaming services. And it's all, you have to purchase, obviously, the streaming services to do it, but it's all combined into one app that allows you to play. You can select episodes from your streaming services and play them as such by air date.
Yeah, an aggregator is definitely the next step, because right now everybody's so scattered all over everything.
Streaming services have diversified.
Yeah, you just need one service that is, like, you subscribe to that service and it, like, grabs your subscriber information from all your other streaming services.
Or you just wait until Disney buys literally every other
media,
like, owning entity.
Yeah.
And then it's all on one service.
I mean, they already own Hulu anyway. They might as well knocking down everything else.
Yeah.
All right, so how would you, seeing as they rated these things pretty low as far as I'm concerned, 6.8 with IMDb, it's a 59% on Rotten Tomatoes. We do 1 to 11. We go by the Spinal Tap scale.
Mad right now.
I give it at least an 8.
That low? I love this movie.
9 out of 11.
Literally no, the only complaint, if I gave it, I'd be like 10.5 out of 11. And it's only because I feel like that ending is just stuck on there. Like, we needed, we haven't had any action this entire time. We should probably have him go kill some people. And they're like, okay. And so then he just goes off and kills a bunch of people and rescues zombies.
Yeah.
And then we get that, I wish we had done more with the ending where it's just, it's literally just like a picture and they're like slowly zooming out and you hear him singing the lineage, but it's okay. Yeah, I'm going to go 10.5 out of 11. What are you going to say?
I would say if we're rating it against other sci-fi films from the 80s, I would easily go 10.5, 11. It's one of the better sci-fi films that I personally watched out of the 80s. And I think we talked like off mic in text, you know, like Starfighter. Explorers and things like that.
I meant to bring up The Last Starfighter as a video game movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we were talking about Super Mario.
Because technically that's how they trained him. They figured out that he can go to the stars and fight against the aliens with video game technology from the 80s, I guess? Because that's all you need.
No, it's fine. Side scroller.
So plausible.
Overall, if you're watching it now, if you take it outside of the 80s context, I'd probably still give it a good 9.5, 10 as a sci-fi film. It's probably one of the more interesting, you know, character-driven films that I've seen in the sci-fi genre in a while. This is a rewatch, so that's about all I wanted to say. So
I'm looking at what other sci-fi movies came out that year. Back to the Future comes out that year.
Yeah.
Brazil.
Brazil?
The Quiet Earth, which I think we watched, and that one is weird. Explorers, Weird Science.
Wasn't that an Australian one?
It was.
Yeah, that was such a weird one.
That was not really.
1985 was a big year for film.
It was.
Big year.
Wow, it left me. It navigated away. It was like, no, you get no list. No list for you.
Really?
Back to Reanimator. Real Genius, that's Weird Science. One. That's a good one. Cocoon came out this year.
Ooh, Cocoon is so good.
And Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome.
Ooh.
Yeah, my favorite Mad Max.
I would still rank this up there.
From Walmart?
I know, it's still... It gets even higher and amongst that group. No, I don't think we bought the Mad Max.
Oh, we didn't.
Okay. No, from the $5 bin at Walmart.
To a lesser extent, we also have the amazing sci-fi films DEFCON 4 and Life Force.
Ah, space vampires.
Right. So.
Which is actually the title of the book it's based on.
Space vampires?
Space vampires, space vampires. Is the title of the book.
Yes.
Life Force is a little more interesting.
They didn't bury the lead. It's got Sir Patrick.
Stewart?
Yes.
Sir Patrick Stewart. In 1985. So he had hair back then, right?
Yeah. No, he never had hair.
No, he never had hair?
He said his hair fell out when he was like 21.
I could have sworn.
In college.
It must have been a wig. Okay. I could have sworn I had seen something of his when he had hair.
Some movies where he wore a wig.
Yeah.
Like at the very beginning of his career.
Because he's in Dune in the 80s too, and he's already bald in Dune.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So then I was mistaken.
The first couple movies he wore a wig, but then he decided to just own it.
Yeah.
All right. So, seeing as we're wrapping everything up, why don't we go ahead and just provide some information on where our listeners can find you?
You can find us at the Strange and Beautiful book, strangeandbeautiful.club. That's our website, which has links to everything on it. We're also on Instagram as Strange and Beautiful Network. And we do have a Patreon, which anybody can join. I mean, it's there. It's available. It's also Strange and Beautiful Network.
And YouTube channel, Strange and Beautiful Network.
On YouTube. Where it's basically just me posting the podcast to still images, so you're so welcome.
That's pretty much where we're probably going to end up going.
Yeah.
Like with everything that's changing over with Spotify coming up in June, I'm kind of weighing my options. Like, I need to get a Patreon up and running, and we're thinking about moving over to a paid service of some sort, but I haven't bitten the bullet on that yet. Because if I do that, I have to put other streaming services on hold so that I can continue to do what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that works out. In the meantime, you can find us on Spotify and any one of the podcast listening platforms, as they always say, like, share, subscribe, all that BS. I don't like pushing people.
Yeah.
If you like listening to us, fine. Tumble across this every once in a while. Go, run, listen, press the button.
If you even rate it, I don't know.
Dare you not to.
I dare you not to rate it.
Right. Just throw some stars at us, why don't you? I don't know.
I hate it.
I always say, if you're going to rate us, leave us a completely honest review. I want an honest review and an honest rating. And I don't think I've received one. people have rated our podcast like... And they've gone and said things, and I'm looking at what they're saying about our podcast, and I'm like, you didn't listen to a thing we did, did you? What episode were you listening to that gave you this idea?
So I've read things about poisoning large language model training data.
Okay.
And there's a tool you can use now for making images, and it adds some like digital artifacts to the image data that's not perceptible to humans, but it poisons the large language model training.
Okay.
I wonder if there's something similar for text, and we could say, hey, listeners, like generate some comment text information that is designed to poison large language model training. Let's break the AI large language model stuff.
Sounds good to me.
And as our good friend Nico, who may join us again sometime soon, is always very fond of saying, I'm keeping it up until she comes back. Drink some water, you thirsty bitches.
And now, for a few ads from friends of the podcast.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Matt.
We are the hosts of the Strange and Beautiful Book Club. On the Strange and Beautiful Book Club, Matt and I share our adventures discovering forgotten movies, television shows, and books in the science fiction, horror, and fantasy genre.
Not necessarily good movies, though.
Oh, certainly not. We love a good, bad movie. The quirkier, the funnier, the more campy, the better.
But we talk about some classics, too.
Of course, we can't ignore our favorites, like Highlander or the 1990s vampire cop television show, Forever Night, which we are currently covering one episode at a time.
As if I could forget.
Oh, hush. You love every minute of it.
Come join us every week as we discover, discuss, and dissect fantasy, horror, and sci-fi genre classics. New episodes release every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So remember, sometimes the strangest things are the most beautiful, too.
So be who you are and love what you love. Until next time, friends.
Bye.
This is Two Chicks Talking Flicks, where we review movies. We try to dig deeper and go more in depth.
And profound for me.
Yeah, for me, I'm just like, what? We even bring up relevant topics.
I remember from Punky Brewster that you don't go inside the fridge. No, you.
And we're here to have those tough conversations.
Mm-hmm. And she was wearing a white dress, which
was yellow. Huh?
It was yellow.
So if this sounds like the podcast for you, please enjoy new episodes every Tuesday.